And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 224, coming at you on a Friday to wrap up our pockets of ADP part 5, ADP 300 through 350, basically 300 plus, your in-game picks, your dart throws, your guys you're going to drop probably in season, and other, you know, potential sleepers, one may say. So before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. Made it to the end of the week. Made it to the end of pockets. We are one day closer to Vegas. We will be a week from, as we record, we will be together in Las Vegas somewhere. Maybe checking into our Airbnb, taking a nap, whatever. I know we both have super early flights on Friday, but such is life.
Yep, such is life. But it'll be good to be there, good to be kicking it off, essentially, and making some fun content for the people around the Discord, the Patreon, and most likely everyone else throughout the weekend. So looking forward to it in a big, big way. Last time I'll bother you all with the announcement, otherwise we will start filling it in different means, but we are drafting a live 12-team standalone league, $250 entry. It's basically an OC, but cheaper with no overall. It's the best way. I'll make it simple for y'all. We're drafting it live. There'll be 9 of us with our computers right now in Vegas. We need 3 more. If you're in Vegas for the drafts, or you just live in Vegas, or you just, so it's one of those things. If you want to draft with us in Vegas, let us know. We'll get you the link. Otherwise, we have some other avenues we're about to explore for the final 3 spots.
Yep, that will be fun. That'll be good. Sunday we got to stay out of trouble. We got to draft by staying out of trouble.
Yeah, something like that. Drafting, staying out of trouble. I never thought I'd say that in the same sentence, but yes, that's where we are in Vegas. Any other announcements? I think that's pretty much it. I think we've wrapped it all up. It's the final 2 draft weekends. The NFPCs, like probably right now as we're recording, they have some auctions and stuff going on Friday. Got main events going on at the mansion in New York. And so, it's go time. 2 final weekends.
2 final weekends. It's funny. Like, I don't know. I've got 3 more drafts left. I'm ready for the season to start. That's probably a byproduct of starting drafting too early. But I'm ready for things to kick off. And we've been debating these same guys at these ADPs, and not just us, just the industry in general. Let's get the ball rolling. Let's do opening day.
Yeah, and there's so many injuries that keep popping up. I'm just like, okay, let's start. The Tyler Stevenson news was a gigantic,
that was tough
gut punch. Many of us have been talking about Tyler Stevenson. And I have plenty of shares of Tyler Stevenson, so that one stings. Austin Riley, right now, right before we started, they said the CT scan came back clean, so. Mm-hmm. Avoid serious injury there, but just like every day, there's a couple of them that just make you, oh no, like we've hit that peak. It's too close to the regular season to work back type thing without an IL stint. So serious go time. Did you see Clay Holmes opening day starter for the Mets?
I did. That is exciting. I'm not too surprised, right? I mean,
not with what's going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exciting. George Kirby got a shot in his shoulder. He's working back. Let's go. You're shaking your head, but I'm in, my man. I'm in.
Yeah, you've got to stay in. You've been in. You can't leave now. You can't leave now. It's not getting a toe in the water. You were in the water, so it's tough to hop out. But yeah, we're talking shoulders and shots and shoulders. So you're in on Kirby, but you're out on Grayson Rodriguez. Go figure. We'll see how that goes.
Is that a beer bet? Is that a beer bet?
No. I hate Grayson Rodriguez as a fantasy player, not as a person, of course. But we'll see. A lot of fun announcements are coming around as we get ready and get closer to opening day, which Japan series will start next week. So got some real baseball to talk about on this show and much, much more. All right, Ryan, let's do it. Let's talk ADP 300 and beyond for you Toy Story fans out there.
That one I've heard of, unlike some of these other obscure shows that you weave into our episodes. So that one I've heard of brought
the dad humor to the table here on a Friday. But what do you got for us here? Is the board is a lot bigger than usual for reasons you will probably let us know.
Yeah, apologies in advance for the squinting for anyone watching on YouTube. I will post, and actually shortly after this show, I will post on the for our Patreon folks the full images for every board for every pocket, but they're a little hard to see. on the YouTube, just because we talked about this before the show, but like there's a ton of pitchers. Since we're near the end of the draft, like that your 12 team NFBC league is 360 picks. So like anytime someone is picked near the end of a draft, they get added here. That's why there's so many pitchers. There's more pitchers listed than hitters at the in the end game of these 12 teamers. It's just because there's a wider variety of different types of pitchers being taken at the end. So a little bit of a squint, a lot of names, but that's kind of the nature of the end game, right? You're just kind of shooting your shot at whoever you think might not only break camp with the job, but also have a ceiling that can help. And if not, you cut bait and move on. I mean, that's the type of player I'm trying to target with these 300 plus picks in 12 teamers. Is I want that. I talk about this, but like that binary decision, that keeper cut by that first fab period, or maybe like the first week or two of the season. I want to have a definitive yes or no, whether I'm keeping this guy or not. And if I'm not, no harm done, move on and fab your replacement.
Yep, totally agree. This is a massive region that you take your chances. You're not even like previous two shows is almost like filling out your last statistical needs or roster needs. This is legit taking your shots. If one of these guys is your starter, it happens, but I'd hope they're not. Let's put it that way. But,
yeah.
There's a few guys I could see being starters, and we'll talk about them, especially in deeper formats. I have some of these guys actually starting on teams for me. But if you're drafting and you're thinking, okay, my team's going to be healthy by opening day, these guys are likely not in that conversation just yet. Let's put it that way.
I think also in like 15 teamers, and then some of this is balanced, but some of your deeper leagues, you obviously want coverage. And so like typically my rule, especially on the hitter side, I want to try and, right, you've got a corner in middle on every team. What I try and do is whatever my corner is, I grab the other as my reserve. So if my corner is a third baseman, I'm going to try and grab someone who's first base eligible here who is playing, and that is coverage. That's kind of like a more of just like, I don't want to take a zero. I'm going to take someone who's boring just because he's playing and I can fill him in if needed. That's kind of the tricky thing with, and same thing with middle infield. If my middle infielder is second base, I'll try and grab a shortstop in reserves and that sort of thing. And always an extra outfielder because you know one of those five is going to get hurt. So it's a little bit of a balance between like how much do you want with coverage and then how much are you taking pure speculations and shots on. I typically lean for coverage on the hitter side. And then my pitcher side, I'm just throwing darts, trying to hit a breakout. If it doesn't work, move on.
Yep, I agree with you. And so statistically, you know, you got some power bats here. You got a couple 20 home run guys. You got a couple 20 steal guys. But the projections can be wonky because it's like, you know, Jacob Young, we think, runs a lot. But Caballero, Dylan Moore, they're projected for 20-plus steals. Do they get enough playing time to get 20-plus steals? That's always a question to be had there. Averages could fluctuate. Like even the counting stats could fluctuate because if you go and look at the actual projections, like we'll talk like a Gavin Lux. He might actually be the primary third baseman now for the Reds. So I bet you if you go look at the projections, they don't have him playing as much as he probably will now. So you could probably move stuff around there. So a lot of this is, as Ryan said, the filler for your team. Take some chances and see where it goes. There are a lot of potential rookies here as well. So like, what do you see on the hitting side that maybe stands out to you, if anything?
I mean, I see a little bit more boring on the hitter side. And that kind of goes along with what I was saying with the coverage. Like you've got, you mentioned Jacob Young, you've got a Ryan McMahon, Jake Cronenworth, you've got Jock Peterson, you've got Jaimer Candelario, who may not be the starter now with that third base news with Lux going to third in Cincinnati. You've got Lux himself. Dylan Moore is boring, but gives good coverage. I feel like on the hitter side, there is more of that like higher floor, lower ceiling type. Whereas the pitcher side, you've got like a Max Meyer, you've got a David Festa, like super high ceilings if they're in the rotation. Meyer obviously is in the rotation, but there's obviously downside there. So that's the biggest thing I see between the two, hitters and pitchers.
Yep, I'm with you. I agree with all of that. So with that being said, let's do player debates. And again, this is pure, just let's get picky with it is the way things go. And I like your first debate because they're teammates and they're young arms. So where do you go with this one?
So yeah, these guys, it's Kumar Rocker versus Jack Leiter. This is really just like, if you're trying to make a decision this weekend in drafts, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of these two will start in the Texas rotation with the news that Bradford is heading to the IL to start the season. And these two guys, just in my last draft and hold, my current one that I'm in, which is my last one, I swear, they went back to back. I took Kumar Rocker. The guy behind me took Jack Leiter. So I lean Kumar Rocker between these two. I know Leiter is having a pretty good spring. I don't know exactly what his stats are, but he has looked good this spring. Both of them come with a ton of prospect pedigree. I still lean Rocker. I know I may be on the, maybe I'm leaning more on the, like, I like Rocker more than I like Leiter from a skill standpoint. I have a weird feeling that Leiter is going to win the job though, but nothing to base that off. I'm just kind of speculating there.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's Leiter as well. The buzz is around Leiter right now. If the team wants the hot hand leaving camp, it makes sense to be Leiter. Leiter has been yo-yoed before. So it's one of those, like, you bring Leiter up when Bradford comes back, Leiter is an easy one to move down type situation. There's a lot of moving parts there. When you look at Leiter as well, last year, he threw between the bigs and the minors, he threw all over 112 innings, basically. So he's much more stretched out than Kumar Rocker, who had a shorter sample last year. So that makes sense. You mentioned the spring, he's 10 two-thirds innings, 2.5 ERA for Leiter, 32% K rate, but a 14.5% walk rate. So that's a little bugaboo, but okay. He's looked pretty filthy, like absolutely filthy, where Rocker has struggled a bit. Like if this was a month ago, I think we're all picking Kumar Rocker. But that's that things can change real quickly. And Rocker still may be the better guy for the entire season. But if we're drafting right now to use these guys to start the season, to me, it's Jack Leiter as well. Like, that's where I'd be going. That's where all signs are pointing to. If the Rangers and Bruce Bochy throw us a curveball, so be it. But it feels like Leiter's the guy you want for at least opening series.
I think that's a good point. And that's probably why I took Rocker in my draft and hold, is because I am thinking the whole season. It's not a fad thing where I have to drop one. Keep in mind, though, like Jack Leiter, I mean, he got torched in the majors last year.
It was bad, really bad.
So, like, I don't know. Again, he's 24. Things can change. He could have improved a ton. Maybe this spring is a bouncing point, though the walk rate does kind of concern me. But just realize, like, really either one of these guys, but, like, if Leiter makes the rotation, maybe don't start him his first start and just see how he looks and then go from there.
Yep, a lot of things could go, and this is why they're late picks. These are more depth pieces on your roster, or, you know, the season starts on a Thursday, and they may play three games the opening weekend, and now Jack gets two starts the following week. Think about that. So that's another thing that can make things a bit interesting as you're drafting, and so on and so forth. All right, my first debate, Heston Kjerstad versus Willier Abreu. Willier Abreu just got cleared on Friday from, he's been out with a virus. It's made him lose like 10 plus pounds. We've heard this happen. Like the three guys in Boston happened to Kyber Ruiz last season. A lot of these guys are getting this nasty stomach bugs that are going around, but Willier Abreu cleared to play starting on Saturday. He's going to be in the lineup on Saturday for Boston, which the Red Sox said that gives him basically a week and a half to 2 weeks. And they expect him to be ready for the start of the season. So yeah. Take that for what it's worth. So like, I think one reason his ADP is this far down is because of the uncertainty of where he would be this season, plus he will platoon. Heston Kjerstad, on the flip side, everybody wants Kjerstad to play except the Orioles, it feels like. He's done pretty much all he could do in the minors. He's having an okay spring. He's walking a ton this spring, but still striking out a bit. So where do you go with these two? You got this young guy that in the minors has shown tons of talent, but it's like, is there a place for him to play? And then you got Abreu, who's now healthy and back and should at least be on the strong side of a platoon.
Yeah, I'm going to Abreu. I think there is some like fear of the Kiber Ruiz effect from last year, where Ruiz lost like 20 pounds to an illness and took him pretty much wiped his whole first half. But good sign that Abreu's playing. Still got 2 weeks to kind of get as right as he can before the season starts. And I'm just not, I mean, the biggest thing is like, I think Willier Abreu, as long as he's not ill anymore, is going to play as a strong side platoon bat. I don't think the same can be confidently said for Heston Kjerstad, the way the Orioles have jerked him around. Like what has changed? What has changed with the Orioles and Kjerstad? Like there are other lefty bats. There's Cedric Mullins, who's playing against righties. There's, I guess, Ryan O'Hearn. That's the path. If you're, if you are a Kjerstad fan, that you're going to assume that Heston Kjerstad beats out Ryan O'Hearn for maybe like a DH type gig against righties. But I'm just not confident Kjerstad plays enough. The Orioles have shown us repeatedly that they don't play Kjerstad regularly. And that's, I mean, why would that change? So I'm going to Abreu.
The perfect storm is Kjerstad and somebody else gets traded for like Sandy Alcantara or something. And this is a much more entertaining conversation with Heston. Like they, for a while there was the Padres, Dylan Cease. So Kjerstad essentially needs to get traded, I think is what it comes down to. So yeah, Abreu for me as well. If he's going to play the strong side, hey, he might get traded too. So don't count that one out just yet. He was been rumored before. He was sick as well. But I'll go Abreu in this conversation for now. All right, who is your next debate?
All right, the need for speed. Yep. So this is the speed debate. If you are drafting at this point, maybe I should throw Dylan Moore in here. We'll see where the conversation takes us. Say I've been in this position. I'm low on steals. I need someone who I can maybe fill in. I'm not depending on him, but need a speedster. Jacob Young is available at ADP 309, right next to Jose Caballero, who is available at ADP 322. And then I'll throw Dylan Moore in there for the hell of it further on down at the very end. Pick 347 for Dylan Moore, all projected for over 20 plus steals. All projected for not much power. Dylan Moore leading the group with 10 home runs. And I would say all of them projected for low batting average, except for Jacob Young. So you're actually getting some batting average with Jacob Young. I'm leaning Jacob Young over Caballero or Dylan Moore. I know I'm giving up some position flexibility, but I don't know if Caballero or Dylan Moore are everyday players. We're at least to start the season, and even though he may hit eighth or ninth, I feel like Jacob Young at least has a job and is going to play to start the season. And that's all you can kind of bank on at this point. And he's going to run on a Washington team that runs like crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty easy, Jacob Young, for me, for the fact that he should play every single game in center field for the most part. Like in a perfect world, he's playing at least 150 games this season. Hits for average, which will be premium. Could steal 35 to 40 bags if things run properly. If he gets ninth, could score 80 plus runs the way that team's set up at the top of the lineup. So I'm big on Jacob Young if this is the kind of talent you need at this point in the draft. The Caballero and Moore concerns are is Caballero has already been essentially said to be a utility player, which he could still play like 4 days a week. So it'll add up in the long term. Right. If you have the bi-weekly roster moves like in FBC, that still could be valuable. I'm not going to say it's not, but the playing time is sketchy. Dylan Moore is technically supposed to be the starting second baseman, which is insane to me to play him over like Ryan Bliss or somebody else in Seattle. And I don't think that lasts long, even if he starts the season at second base. Moore is just atrocious at the plate. It's just horrible at the plate. So I would rank it essentially Young, Caballero, Moore for me, and it's a clear Jacob Young.
I mean, the good thing about, but you kind of have to wait it out. The good thing about Moore and Caballero is not just like the multi-position eligibility, but it's the multiple paths of playing time. Like somebody's going to get hurt on the one of four positions that Dylan Moore plays. So I'm not too worried about the AB total, but it's just like, yeah, it's tough to count on anybody who's not playing every single day. So I would go Young as well.
Much better draft and hold plays for sure.
Another thing you can do, and I've done this, is you could pair, who was it? I think I did it in labor. I think it was your guy, Wallner. I think I paired like Wallner with Jacob Young. And you can kind of, you know, you average those two guys. Yes, there's some risk putting all the power in one basket, putting all the steals in another basket. But you can kind of piece together a decent composite player by taking a power bat with Jacob Young, who is projected for four home runs. So I think if you do take Jacob Young, you do need to be aware of that and at least pair him with another power outfielder late in your draft.
Yep. I agree with that as well. All right. My final debate, it's two youngsters that have got a ton of spring steam. One is locked into the fifth rotation spot with the Yankees. The other one might sneak into the rotation with the Tigers, still up for grabs. That's not a for sure thing yet, but he's proven he belongs, just doesn't know if there's room for him to belong. So this will be between Will Warren of the Yankees, who has an ADP of 329, and Casey Mize of the Detroit Tigers at 338. And I like this for two reasons. Both guys pitching well. You're a Casey Mize guy So I'm curious to see where you stand on this debate, though.
I've stayed a Casey Mize guy through thick and thin, through some hate from people who know their stuff. So I'm going to stick with Casey Mize. I just think coming off of Tommy John surgery, like the first half of what we saw with Casey Mize last year wasn't that great, but some nice control. He's a ground ball guy. The swinging strikes upticked in the second half, that Mize was finally kind of truly past Tommy John and improving as the season went on. Like, I'm not 100% sure he has the job either, but I think if Casey Mize gets that fifth job in Detroit, there's a ton of prospect pedigree there. He's another year removed from Tommy John. I think it's a gamble worth taking. Will Warren, I'm fine with too. And Will Warren, there's something to be said for, he does have the job and you never know what'll happen once he takes off. But I'll go Casey Mize over Will Warren for now.
Yeah, looking at Casey Mize, dude's thrown 11 and third innings this spring without allowing an earned run. That's pretty good. And he's got a 33% K rate with a 12% walk rate. So overall pitching extremely well, you know, the talent, who knows who he's been facing, but it just comes down to, will they find room for Casey Mize in Detroit? Because a valid point you mentioned, right now they have him as the SP4. So on roster resource. So if Mize is the SP4, I think that's a great pick at that point in time. And I would actually take Casey Mize over Will Warren with you in this one, because a very, very, very important point to me that you mentioned is last year was coming off the TJ, and a lot of people struggle off the TJ, as you mentioned, like all the stuff. I support those claims that you made. And I don't feel like it's, at least where I've listened, have not been discussed as much. It's more like, man, he really struggled in all these different factors. So I like Casey Mize quite a bit there. I do like Will Warren too, though. This was one of their top prospects in New York. He's having a really strong spring. He's allowed a couple runs over 11 and two-thirds innings. K rate's a little down, but so is the walk rate compared to Casey Mize. Still very good, 28.6, 7.1. Small samples, but just worth noting, both have been pitching very, very well. Casey Mize should just stick in the rotation, essentially, depending on health, of course, and production. But this is a guy that, you know, last year we saw 102 innings at the major league level. If you factor in the minor league level last year, he threw 30. So he got about 115 innings out of Mize. So you'd imagine 140, 150 should be applicable for Casey Mize this season, where Will Warren, on the flip side, you're shooting for a guy that threw about 130 innings last year. So both of them are pretty well stretched out. But to my last part, long-winded, Will Warren, he's got the rotation spot now, but when any of these pitchers come back, given Luis Eels not for 3 months and Garrett Cole isn't for the year, the Yankees are talking about trading. So if they trade a guy like Will Warren, could be out of that rotation quickly, even though he's better than Marcus Stroman. So give me Casey Mize, all things said.
What if I turn this ADP battle into a tag team match, and you could take Casey Mize or Will Warren, or two of the most boring people on earth, same ADP, Jameson Taillon and Chris Bassett? Like, which direction are you leaning?
I almost made that a debate just to like annoy the whole fan base, but I didn't.
Off the heels of our Mitch Keller, Merrill Kelly, barn burner last night. I almost
just put two completely boring, like, do they have a pulse pitchers on the thing? I did. So for me, this is one of my last picks. I'm taking one of the young guns. I'm rolling the dice. Like, we know who Taillon is. We know who Bassett is. Like, in, I guess, a deeper format, those guys do have viability. I get it, because they're going to still pitch every fifth day. Taillon is so boring when it comes to strikeouts, but he's just like a quality start dude. Just kind of, he's like a poor man's Waka, almost, as weirdly as that sounds, with Taillon. Bassett used to be really good and struggled last year, so what if he bounces back? That could be, I take Bassett over Taillon, I'll say that much, if you want to go that direction. But I take both the young pitchers over them pretty quickly.
I think another thing to think about is, and I haven't done this yet, maybe some people are starting to do this, start to look at the first couple weeks schedules. Yep. Start to see who some of these, because you are kind of in streaming territory with some of these guys, and it is a decent strategy to draft like you're streaming with a couple of these late pitchers, where like if somebody has a couple really good matchups and you think they're going to be slotted in for, like you said, Bubba, like typically with opening day on a Thursday, a lot of these fours and fives may get a two-start week that first full week of the season. Look at what that matchup looks like. And if it's juicy for like a Bassett or Tyon or Warren or Mize, then that factors into my consideration as well. Now, I haven't, do as I say, not as I do, I haven't even looked at schedules yet, but maybe maybe while we're in Vegas, look at schedules. Yeah. I doubt it.
I just pulled up the RotoWire grid, and they have some rough ideas on how things are going.
But any idea at this point.
Yeah, it's not very deep, so I was just going to try to throw just stuff at the wind.
Start to think about that as we enter like the last weekend of drafts.
I want to throw one more into this conversation because
Royal Rumble, another one comes out of the tunnel here.
He's kind of like he feels like a veteran because he's like 27, so he's kind of in the middle of these. Okay. Mike Soroka having a big spring for Washington. Where does he fit into this mix for you? Because like again, we're talking in game guys. He should be locked in that rotation. He's pitched 7 innings this spring at the 1.29 ERA and really good, a 30 almost 38% K rate and a 4% walk rate. Like he's looked really good to start things out.
I mean, this is a hole in my game. Soroka's been a blind spot for me just because he's been so bad or absent for so long. But I would have thought Michael Soroka's like 30, 31 years old. Yep. Only 27. Certainly young enough to recapture. I don't even know when he was. Was it 2019?
It was a couple. I got it right here. It was
Jesus.
He had his big coming out party in 2019 through 174 innings. And then 2020 through 13 innings. Missed 21, missed 22 with back-to-back Achilles injuries. 32 innings in 2023. 79 innings last year. Only 9 starts, 25 games. He pitched out of the bullpen primarily for the White Sox.
Yeah, I'd take Mize or Warren over Soroka. I just feel like that's so long ago. That
do you have Soroka chances over the old guys?
I don't know.
That's part of the Royal Rumble. Who's getting tossed over the top?
That's
here?
That's true. if I'm sitting there in a draft, no, I'm probably not taking Soroka. I'm probably taking Bassett or Tyon over Soroka.
So again, once again, Ryan's on brand, prefers the old guys over the young guy. Got it. Yes. All right. Well, we'll move on.
Michael
from there.
Soroka limping with a torn Achilles down the tunnel into the Royal Rumble.
Yep. Can't even get up to the third buckle. The ring. he's fighting for his life just to get in. But here we are on this one. I'm not even going to mention it, but DJ Hurz is having a fall from grace right now. It's very depressing. We'll just leave that one alone for now. All right. We're not going to do any fades because this is literally just throw your darts and see what happens. Even though Ryan's apparently fading Mike Soroka, I guess we're going to put that on the list. But targets in this range, we're going to do a handful of targets each to basically some of the dart throws we like. And Ryan's going to kick it off with a show favorite on this one. Ironically, yeah. I'm just going to leave it at that. But who's your first target here?
Yeah, we're going to go with the good doctor. We're going to go with Dr. Foucher, Calvin Fauché at an ADP of 302. I'm hedging, and I don't know, I feel less confident about this as we get closer to opening day that Fauché will be the guy in Miami. I have not heard anything definitive from the team on Fauché versus Tinoco, but I'm still going to kind of stick with Calvin Fauché. If you aren't as confident in Fauché, I think you could pivot to Seth Halverson,
yep.
Who has an ADP of 334. Also, don't know if he's the closer in Colorado. And yes, it's Colorado, but Halverson's good. I think either one of Fauché or Seth Halverson, if you're in a league where you're wanting to take a closer, third closer, spec, dart throw, whatever, Fauché and Halverson are, I think, the options. Like there's Griffin Jacks, but we know he's not going to be the guy. Luke Weaver's not the guy. Joyce is not the guy. So like maybe Edwin Uceta is not the guy. So at least Fauché and Halverson have a 50-50 shot at claiming the closer role for their respective teams. And this late in the draft, I think that's a gamble worth taking if you want to try and grab that third reliever.
Yep. Fully on board with that. I've been doing that in a lot of leagues. I have a lot of shares of both of them and for the good, the bad or the ugly. I do. Halverson's having a rough spring, but he's still better than Kenley and company there. Yes. Doesn't say much. Bar is pretty low, but yeah, I like both these options. Fauché seems like the better guy. Tinoco still gets a lot of love. I looked at two different reliever sources as you were talking. One of them has the Marlins and the Rockies pin with like three options, like a fluid situation. Whereas another one has Fauché as the closer with Tinoco setting up, and then Kenley as the closer with Halverson setting up in Colorado. So who knows? Like you said, it's a coin toss, and we'll see where it goes. So there's probably a reason they go 40 picks apart as well. All right, my first target here is Jock Jams. I'm honestly surprised he's going this late. I know he's a platoon guy. It's been established, but we talked about it on the last show, Ryan. Sometimes platooning is a good thing. Like, it's not a bad thing. And with Jock Jams, we've seen it be a very good thing. 23 homers last year, 15 the year before, 23 the year before that. So the last two seasons, he's played over 132 games. He's hit 23 home runs. And that's the strong side of a platoon in Texas in a very, very loaded lineup. So lineup positioning could become an impact with Peterson. We'll see. But even in those two seasons, I mentioned the 23 home runs, he hit 274 and 275. Like, he's really taking advantage of that. He's great in OBP formats. Last year had a 393 OBP because he walks over 10% of the time each of the last 2 years. I love the run production possibilities. I love the power potential. We're talking about a bench bat, so you can pick when you start him. It makes total sense here. He's a guy, I just thought with the way we've seen him play two out of the last 3 years in that lineup, I thought he'd go higher. He's projected for 21 home runs, one of only three players in this entire pocket that we're discussing, projected for over 20 home runs. So it's a power source with a better batting average than I think they're giving him credit for. And the run production should be pretty darn good for this range. So I like Jock Jams quite a bit.
And projected for 21 home runs in a part-time role, which is different than like a Ryan McMahon who's on this list projected for 20 across, I would assume, a full-time thing. And so that's kind of what we're talking about with platoons. If you can time it right, you can make it work with Jock. I just think, I don't know. I feel like we'll be talking about Jock Jams every Thursday all year long as a streamer or not streamer, depending on Texas's schedule. And I just think it's hard to hold a guy, especially in a 12 teamer, hold a roster spot for someone like that. But I don't know. It'd be another one where look at Texas's once we, and actually like, as we're recording this, their rotations are starting to get cemented. The white, yes. Carlos Rodon was just named opening day starter, and the White Sox top four was just named.
Dude. What are
you see
they?
That? You
what
seen
are,
this?
No, I haven't seen it. What are they? Because I have a bunch of Twitter notifications. That's probably what it is. But
yeah, underdogs going nuts with the
who are announcers. The top
the
four?
White Sox top four per manager, Venable.
Yeah, Will Venable.
Will Venable's the White Sox manager.
Yeah, he's probably younger than us, Ryan, and he's the White Sox.
I thought he'd be on this ADP list. I thought he was still playing. all right, so top four. I did not know Will Venable was the White Sox manager. Yeah. You knew this?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I do team previews. I should know who the managers are.
Yeah, I guess. Jesus Christ.
It's a Friday, baby.
All right, so the top four is per manager Will Venable is Martin Perez, Jonathan Cannon, the loose cannon, Davis Martin, and Sean Burke.
All four of those guys are going after the show. If we did a part six, they'd be in that blue board, by the way.
So, Martin Perez, man, crafty lefty. Let's go.
I'm not, and that's where I was going with this. Like, I know we're making jokes because it is a horrific starting four, like, but it's the White Sox starting four nonetheless. So they're going to pitch pretty much every day. Like, Burke has had that younger upside that people are really like, he's the most popular in that group, probably, for drafting purposes. Martin Perez in a deep league, he's boring but beautiful at times. Like, I really don't hate that. Jonathan Cannon, he's kind of blah to me, but maybe he figures it out. He's young. Davis Martin is the sneaky right. one. No, I'm gonna say Davis Martin because I remember Mike Carter made a good point on him on the show that he was once like a higher end option. I believe he was with the Braves also. I could be wrong, but he was a part of the trade that he was one of the bigger pieces in the trade. Whether that's a good or a bad thing for the White Sox recently. So he's a guy that could, fab wise, we could be talking about these guys. So that's why I wanted to bring them up real quick. All right, who's your next target in this range? Because we're fading the White Sox, apparently. So who's your next target?
My next target's Will Venable. Target is Max Meyer. Max Meyer is gaining some serious helium with a great spring I listened to on the Fantasy Pros kind of right after we went. We were guests on the Fantasy Pros Fantasy Fest, I think they called it. Lance Brozdowski, who is just like a pitching like mastermind in terms of not only the things he knows, but how he communicates things with pitching to people like you and me who don't know the ins and outs of IVB and movement and all this stuff. Lance is super high on not only Max Meyer, but like the entire Marlins rotation. But the case that he made for Max Meyer was pretty convincing. Again, this is somebody who, similar to the lines of like Soroka, I guess, you know, has been out of the game for a little bit, but like still only 25 years old, was not, only a couple years ago, one of the top pitching prospects in the minors, is healthy right now, has a job with the Marlins, and is going at a 311 ADP, which is that perfect time to where if it hits, this is awesome. If you draft Max Meyer, you bench him for his first start or two, see how he does. And if it looks like the MLB version of Max Meyer, you just drop him and move on. So I think Max Meyer is like the perfect, like quintessential type of pitching pick I would make in this group for all those reasons I just said.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that, but I do want to ask you, because his ADP is 311. Do you take him or Casey Mize at 347?
I would probably, I hate saying this, but in a shallower format, I'd take Meyer. In a 15 teamer, I'd take Mize.
Okay, that's fine. I think that stuff's relevant in this late of the draft, honestly. Like certain guys will have much more appeal, because in a 15 team, you're actually still needing some of these.
You
guys.
Need these dudes. You need one or two of these dudes.
Still. That's what I'm saying. So there is a point to a conversation of that in reality. In a 10 team league, you don't even see this part of the draft. So
correct.
It all depends on what you're doing.
Yep.
All right. This one's for you, Ryan. Austin Dude. Hayes. Oh. Austin Hayes, ADP 347. And I'm back, baby. I'm back.
Did you ever leave? Did you ever leave Austin Hayes?
I can't quit him. There's a few factors, talking with different people, doing my Orioles preview with him, with Dream and some others. Obviously, Hayes is on the Reds now. I'm very aware of this.
I was going to say, is he on the Orioles?
I'm very aware of this. I'm getting there. I'm a long-winded person.
I mean, I'm learning all kinds of new stuff on the show today. So
you're welcome. This is what I'm here for. Useless knowledge most of the time. We're in the depth. This is what happens when you draft DCs since October. this is where we go. But Austin Hayes, he switched his hitting approach when they changed the walls, him and Mountcastle. That's why you saw some power numbers decrease towards the end. Then he got traded to Philly, had a severe virus, like probably similar to what Kyber Ruiz had. He was never the same after that. Had a couple of injuries as well towards the end of his time in Baltimore. Goes to Cincinnati. He's going to be a starting outfielder in Great American Small Park. So I'm looking at Austin Hayes, and you know the projections have him hitting around 250 with like 15 home runs. I think that's fair. I think there's more to that. We saw 22 homers in 2021, 16-16 before things fell off the rails. And that 16-16 was when the walls changed in Baltimore as well. We saw a guy hit 275 in 2023, but around 250 most of the other times. So I think at 250, maybe he gets close to 20 home runs. I think the projections, like the Bad X has him for 49 runs and 57 RBIs. I think that's playing a little low in Cincinnati. So I think he's a really good fifth outfielder, or at least a bench outfielder. Like, if you, depending on how you play the position, won't get you a ton of steals, but I think the power, the counting stats, and a respectable batting average are strongly in play in this range. And I think the fun that Ryan has had with him in recent years will be taking a step back when they see Austin Hayes do his thing. Especially, he's great for deeper formats. I'll say that much. Great for deeper formats, a serviceable 12-team format.
Yeah, I've actually, so I make fun of you for Austin Hayes. I have taken him in a few weeks. Like I took him in labor mix, because what I was talking about before is you need coverage. Austin Hayes is my sixth.
He's going to get at bats.
If one of my top five outfielders gets hurt, none of them currently are yet. I will need Austin Hayes. So, like, I think that is good depth and coverage for a sixth outfielder. So, I get that. You want to guess my other bench bat in labor? It's my guy, your guy, Ty France. And Austin Hayes. So why do you hate Ty France but not Austin Hayes?
Well, because Ty France, I'm more mad that he should not be taking at bats away from Jose Miranda. That should not be a thing.
That's fair.
I love Ty France. Last year I picked him up like on the waiver wire shows once he got regular at bats in Cincy. I was all in. So I'm fine in that regard. I'm just annoyed that he's taking at bats from Miranda, who is clearly, I think, better than Ty France. But that's my biggest beef.
Fair. No, I'm on board with your Austin Hayes pick, actually.
I love it. I don't know what's in Ryan's water cup today, but I love it. All right. I almost did a catcher's debate today just to put the icing on the cake for these, but I did not. And this was going to be one of the names I was going to do. Okay. So who's your next target?
It's Danny Jansen. It's just, I think while Danny Jansen is healthy, I figure at some point Danny Jansen will get hurt, but I actually think he's a good hitter. And I like the line, the park change for the Rays, like the lineup for the Rays. And if you're skimping for a second catcher at this point, you can do very well with Danny Jansen. So who is your battle going to be? Cause there's like Jonah Heim, there's Patrick Bailey as other catchers down here. Like I like Jansen over both of those guys. Bo Naylor, Sean Murphy's going this range, but he's hurt. But like I'd take Jansen over Naylor and Bailey and Jonah Heim. So,
yep. We've talked about Jansen a ton. I think while healthy, phenomenal late pick. Just be prepared to pivot when that healthy thing disappears. Yeah. But for now, I love it. I think it's like if you punt the position, heck, I have a lot of Stevenson shares. If Jansen's on the wire, he'll probably be one of my top priorities to fill in while Stevenson's out. So I'm on board with that as well. Like Danny Jansen quite a bit. All right. I'm going to stick in Cincinnati with my next pick here, and it's Gavin Lux. There's a few reasons behind this. I love the idea of a change of scenery for one. I'll say because that whole LA situation just seemed like a disaster for him. He still hit 251 over the disaster last year, but the power of the speed really never came to what we expected him to someday to be. 27, still young. We saw Michael Bush get out of LA and start to thrive. I think there's a world where Gavin Lux can maybe not be great, but much, much better. And the fact that the Reds are willing to make him their primary third baseman, like he'll platoon with Candelario, but he'll play the strong side of the platoon at third base, giving you second base, third base with one of your last picks, I think is very nice. When Ryan talked about having coverage at positions, he can cover two positions for you, which would be nice to have as well. Another guy that's going to get you at least a 250-ish batting average, which as you get deeper here is very good to have. I think you're talking 15-plus homers, not 11. And steals is up for debate. Like we really haven't seen him steal. But again, Great American Small Park, playing every day at third base, getting that flexibility. As a late guy to kind of fill out a roster, I actually have been using him in 15s as a second baseman late. If I punt the position, I completely whiff on the position. I've been taking Gavin Lux in 15s. As Ryan likes to say, we always have at least like one hole on our roster. You could have worse holes than a platooning second base, third baseman in Great American Small Park. So I'll take my chances with Gavin Lux figuring it out.
And just to – so like Lux isn't third base eligible right away, right? He's got to get the 10.
No, it'll take 10 games. But yeah, if things work out well, let's say 2 weeks, and he should have it.
Right. Yep, which will work. And, you know, I mean, Lux is someone where like you don't even look at the projections because, I mean – I hate to sound like a broken record, but like you're shooting for the moon with some of these picks. And like, if it suddenly clicks for Gavin Lux, he could blow away these projects. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So,
Let me say this real quick. Like 2019 was like his last full minor league season, played 113 games at AAA. This is where the hype train was. Dude at 26 homers, stole 10 bags, 99 runs, 76 RBIs, 347 batting average, struck out less than 20%. He has struggled his entire career, but it's been 23 games, 19 games, 102, 129, 139, but it's been yo-yoed all over the place, like zero. So the last consistent season he had playing baseball, he thrived. And again, AAA, I get it, but the dude has the talent is what I'm getting at for sure. I'm not saying you're disagreeing, but I wanted to drive that home a little more.
Yeah, and I mean, a change of scenery could – I mean, honestly, I'm looking at the – I could be speaking out of turn here. Like how many stud prospect hitters have the Dodgers actually developed?
Not many. There's always a bunch of them.
Ohtani was bought. Betts was traded for. Freeman was bought. Teoscar was bought. Max Muncy. Will Smith maybe. But like what has Will Smith
truly
done? James Outman's been a major bust. Like I don't know. I'm just kind of grasping at straws here. But like maybe LA isn't the best place for a touted prospect to try and come up. I mean, traded away Miguel Vargas, like,
and Vargas is having a great spring, like hitting like 400 or something like that. He's crushing it right now.
So I think there is something to at least speculating on a change of scenery. Again, Gavin Lux could just suck again and whatever, but yep. I don't know. At least something has changed with him, and you want to take advantage of that
for sure. All right, I love your next pick here. I was debating putting him down, but this is a good pick here for you.
Yeah, I'd probably take him over your guy, over Austin Hayes. We'll see.
I would too. I would.
I think it just depends. So it's Dalton Varsho. I think the price is super cheap because we didn't think Dalton Varsho would be ready for opening day. And there's a chance he's still not. And there's something to be said for not drafting injured guys, but I feel like Dalton Varsho is well past the point of like setbacks and having to, you know, worry about that kind of stuff. Whereas like, cause he's been playing in spring training games, and it's almost like the question is Dalton Varsho going to DH or play in the field to start the season, which for fantasy, you don't really care as long as he's active. So I think worst case, Varsho starts on the IL and it's a minimum stint. So like, and if you can get through the first week, I think you're getting a really good power speed bat. Yes, Dalton Varsho is going to hurt you in average, but I feel like this is a massive discount for somebody who, I know you don't want to draft hurt guys, but like, I feel like this is a pretty low risk move taking Dalton Varsho at ADP 330, because once Dalton Varsho is playing, he is an everyday guy and is actually pretty good. So I like Dalton Varsho quite a bit.
Yeah, I love that call. He's hitting great this spring. Shoulder's good enough to hit. He just started a throwing program. So it's like you said, do they put him on the IL to get his throwing program finished, or do they let him ramp up and let him DH? I think they're leaning towards DHing, it looks like, the way they're putting him out there to hit like every single day. So that's what it feels like.
Yep.
And so I'm with you on that, because he should be higher than this. He's only down because of the injury concerns. The hit tool speaks for itself, and he's doing it. I was going to pivot to something else real quick. I think it goes to show you, like, the Jays are willing to do this because he's healthy enough to hit and start throwing. Zach Neto is not DHing anywhere right now. Like, what is with his shoulder? I just wanted to bring that up, because they're saying he's progressing nicely but not throwing at all, but he's still not at least DHing. Like, I have questions there with that whole situation still. And, I just want to leave that at that. I'm really concerned about Neto, and maybe I'm overthinking it, but the fact it's been this long and we haven't really got a firm – anything on him is very strange.
Yeah. But
I digress. All right, my next one, it's another one of these young pitchers or transitioned pitchers or these late dart throws that we keep talking about. And I'm going to go with Chris Bubich. Bubich was once a highly touted prospect in the Royal system. They had like three or four young guns they drafted in like a two-year span, and they all kind of fizzled out for the most part. But you have Bubich, who he made 20 starts in 21, 27 starts in 2022, never really got it going. Goes to the minors, you know, he got injured, did some things. But last year comes and makes 27 appearances out of the pen, 30 innings, a 2.67 ERA. His strikeouts were outstanding. Dude had a 32% K rate after a 23, an 18, a 20, a 22. So switched up the pitch mix. The velocity was much, much better. Whip was phenomenal. So there's the age old question, then just leave him in the bullpen. He was great. Can he transition to the rotation? That's the question. We've seen a lot of guys do that now, and they want to transition to the rotation. And so far this spring, he's looked really good. He had one bad outing. That's what a small sample will show you in the 5.59 ERA. But other than that, he's pitched pretty darn good. The strikeout percentage is only 20%. You'd like to see more, but I guess it's more just kind of gambling on the pedigree in this range, a team that needs starting pitching help, because last year, like, the only rotation I believe that kept all five starters all year, that is not going to happen again, folks. I hate to break it to you. So they're going to need pitching depth, and Chris Bubich could be the perfect guy for that. So I'm willing to take chances here. Like, I'd probably still take like Casey Mize or some of these other guys we talked about, but I have a ton of shares of Chris Bubich also. Like this little late range, I know it's one thing I do, and I think Ryan does too. He can answer for sure. Seven reserve picks, I usually take at least five pitchers. So Bubich usually ends up in the mix somewhere in those five pitchers. And he's a guy I have been targeting just for did he make the right switch, the right changes to go back to the rotation? Because again, we're looking at a guy that's only going to be 27 years old this year.
And I think we're starting to get to the point with Kansas City where I really just like them as a pitching organization with what they've done with Cole Reagans, how, you know, Michael Wacha continues to do his thing. Seth Lugo last year, like the evidence is kind of building for Kansas City there. I really like, so I was just looking up Bubich in like in tiny samples and bullpen. I get that, but like just the 30 innings in the majors last year, it was a 15% swinging strike, which is really good. League average is like 11.5, 12, but he also threw a ton of strikes. It was a 30% ball rate, which is elite. League average is like 36%. And then he had an over 56% ground ball rate. Like, if I was doing a bloom board on elite ball rate, elite swinging strike, and elite ground ball going past ADP 300, like, there's not many guys just going out. I'm guessing there are not many guys that would even land on that list, and Chris Bubich would be one of them. So yeah. I'm on board with it. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see with the whole rotation bullpen thing. But like even in the bullpen last year with Bubich, he threw three pitches. It was it was four seam slider, changeup. Threw the changeup 17% of the time. So I mean that was his tertiary pitch, but it was still a meaningful part of his pitch mix. So I think with those three pitches, he still kind of has that starter's mentality. So I'm on board with that, man. I like that.
And it's, well, thank you. And another thing, it's kind of like my Jordan Hicks idea last year. It's okay. Maybe people are cautious about what the workload's going to be like. Will he fizzle out? Hey, use him for his 8 or 10 starts and then move on if you have to. But I think he could give you 8 to 10 really good starts. And maybe he goes longer because again, he's done it before where Hicks never really had.
Yeah.
All right. Who is your final target here? And this is just the perfect icing on the cake for you.
Yeah, I guess if I'm going to go down with this ship, it's going to be Hayden West. It's going to be Hayden Wesneski's ship, I guess. Fifth starter for Houston. It's the combination of I was just talking about Kansas City, how I trust them. I trust Kansas City, as I trust Houston even more as a pitching organization with what they did with pretty much their entire staff in season last year with the addition of Kikuchi. Just like they know what they're doing with some of these guys that they bring in, and so I'm not blindly putting my faith in them, but when they do that with Hayden Wesneski, who I liked a ton last year when he was on the Cubs, just really like the skills, just hasn't had a chance to kind of stick in the rotation and do his thing. Sounds like he's going to have that chance now. Hayden Wesneski is probably my most rostered pitcher on reserves this year. So I just think with the role being safe, the skills are good, and Houston kind of, they acquired Wesneski for a reason. They see something there. I'm throwing that dart.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. We've talked about him for quite some time, so not gonna add too much to that. That's a full go in my neck of the woods with Wesneski. Yeah, we love the talent in Chicago Astros organization. Like, let's roll. I'm with you there. Before I give your last one, it was just announced that Parker Meadows will start the season on the IL. So that has become official, folks. For those that have been hoping that nerve would fix, we kind of thought it was going to happen. It's official.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yep. All right. Tyler McGill will be my last one. And this is one of those, like, when we start our stuff every year. So it's kind of why it's a good, you know, bring it full swing here, Ryan. We do DC talks. We talk about later in the rounds who could be the 6th, 7th, 8th starter for teams. Tyler McGill was always a guy we're like, hey, 6 or 7 for sure. We haven't even hit the start of the season yet, and here he is. Like, Tyler McGill is scheduled to be in the rotation. Now, given Manaea might only miss a few starts, but there's other moving parts in New York that could lead to some serious McGill success. This is a pitcher we saw throw very well in the past, Siler McGill, some might remember. Kind of ran out of steam in 2023. He came out guns blazing, then kind of fell apart. Last year looked really good in his short, 15 starts. The strikeout rate was up to 27%, 17.5% K to walk. That's very, very serviceable. This spring, he has a 30% K rate and a 21% strikeout to walk. He's earned every bit of his chance to start in this rotation. And it's one of those, if he can start off strong, he might be able to run with it. And it's a guy I'm willing to take chances on, or at least, you know, maybe we look at schedules. If he's the 4th starter, 5th starter, that could mean a two-step early on, which is big as well. Because originally it was, okay, he's going to fight with Griffin Canning for the last spot. I think we all can agree Tyler McGill's better than Griffin Canning. The argument was Canning has no options and McGill does. Now we don't have to worry about it to start the year. They're going to basically have to earn it in season, which will be very good. And I think we can all agree Siler is the better pitcher. Just can he do it? And I'll take that chance with one of my last picks.
Absolutely. Dude, there's more pitchers we talk about it's crazy. Because I like that move too. Yeah. I mean,
like, there's Reed Detmers who, like, we can make our pros and cons for really easily.
Sure.
That's why I say I'll take 5 pitchers at the end, and I have a lot of names in this chart scattered throughout my roster. A lot in this range. Like Jose Soriano, elite strikeout stuff. Can you ever rein in the control? If he can, the dude could be scary. So that's a big what if late. And he's one of the bigger ADP risers actually for the back end. People like the main event guys are buying into Jose Soriano. So yeah. Dustin May's up there for those that like Dustin May. It's
Nick Martinez. I've been a big Nick Martinez fan. He's going 304. I haven't talked about him at all. Didn't talk about Dustin May, who we're kind of
out on him. Whatever, Justin Verlander, if you like old people.
He's an option. If you like old people, I like old people.
Yeah, you hang out with me 3 or 4 times a week, so you might as well.
Yeah. But no, I think, I mean, and to kind of wrap it up, you said earlier, like, you like a 2-5 split hitter pitcher reserves. I think that's kind of why is a couple reasons, like make sure you have with your two hitters or whatever. Maybe it has to be 3 for coverage purposes. You want coverage at corner, middle, and outfield. But I just think there's so many like intriguing darts to throw at starting pitcher. You want to get as many bites at that apple. Like they're not all going to hit. Hell, half of them aren't going to hit. But if you have 5 of them and 2 of them hit, that is awesome. Another thing to think about, as I mentioned, opening day on a Thursday, like you won't be able to that first scoring period. Likely fill out an entire 9 of staff. If you have more reserve pitchers, you will either A, be able to do that on the opening weekend, or B, you would have a slew of 2 start options that first full week. So I think it does behoove us to at least to start the season. And then who knows once injuries hit, you know, what your split looks like on the bench. But I think a 2-5 or a 3-4 hitter pitcher split for a 7-man bench is I like that. I like that a lot. I think in labor, I've got a 2-6 or no, a 2-4 because there are 6 reserves. So that kind of goes in line there.
Yep. Nope. Makes total sense to me as well. All right. Let's get into some listener questions here. I got 2 from the old Twitter bot first. We'll start with the DM I started to read on yesterday's show, and we'll finish it off here from Taylor Johnson.
And just stopped halfway through.
Yeah, but I realized it'll be better for this pocket, as we discussed. Taylor Johnson says, who is the one hitter and one pitcher that you think will be drafted in the top 150 next year? For the record, you nailed this question last year with Matt Chapman as the answer.
Ooh, thank you. Good recall.
Yeah.
I will go Dalton Varsho. We'll go Dalton Varsho.
That's fair. That's fair. My
hitter. I mean, pitcher, I could name a ton, but I'll go on the pitcher side. I'll go.
You should go with Casey Myers.
God, we didn't even talk about David Festa. He's not going to
start. I know. That's one of your boys. I'm surprised. He's not going to be in the rotation.
But that's why he's not. Yeah. I don't know. I'll say Casey. Yeah, I'll say Casey Mize.
You kind of have to after what you
I'll say Casey Mize is drafted top 150 next year. Him and Varsho.
I'm cheating because I have the two boards from 250 to 350 in front of me now. So if I'm going my one hitter that jumps into the 150 range, there's some good ones here. Because you took Dalton Varsho is like the only one I really, really love on today's show. So I'm gonna take a step to the 250 one. And
what? Cheating, man. What are you doing?
No, it says you've got to be in the top one. Okay, so it's from this one. Fine. I'm fine.
I don't care. I don't care, dude. No, honestly, yeah, so while you're looking, I'll throw another name out there. We haven't talked about. It's Christian Campbell.
Yeah,
because I think this time next year, Christian, it's kind of cheating a little bit, but like Christian Campbell, I think this time next year will have a job. And if he's as good as the prospect folks say he's going to be, I think Christian Campbell is a very good bet to be a top 150 pick next year. It's just hard to take him right now because you've got to stash him for who knows how long.
All right.
So now that Bubba's looking in the 100 to 150 group here.
I'm back to the post 300. Sheet's right in front of me. You took Dalton Varsho for the hitter. I will take. Man, there's not a lot here.
You can go to 250, dude. I don't care.
No.
What about
no,
your boy? I don't want to hear Luis Angel. Acuna, Acuna.
It's got to get playing. If it's playing time, it's there. Okay, I will go to Luis Angel. We're going to go Gavin Lux. Gavin Lux figures it out. Go Gavin Lux. He figures it out. That's a really, really probably dumb statement, but I'm going to go Gavin Lux on that one. You put Casey Mize. Now, this is where it gets fun because there's a ton of options. Over here, I think Mize is a sound pick. I will go with Griffin Jackson. If he was a closer, it'd be top 150. Let's go with you took Jax. Festa would be, but he's not going to pitch. I guess I'll take Will Warren. If he sticks in the rotation, I'll take Will Warren of the New York Yankees. All right, the other Twitter question we have here. This is where it's fun, and I'll be going to the Discord. I'm all over the place. Just give me a second. At Sleepy Gator says, next pocket questions for you. Fetty or Festa?
I want to say Festa. I just don't know when he's going to start. I would say over the course of the season, Festa. But if I'm drafting and I need someone for the first month, I'll say Fetty. I don't know if that helps, but that's where I lie with it.
Agree completely. If Festa's in the rotation on day one, he's not even getting drafted here.
Right.
Any late catcher value, Hunter Goodman, Baldwin, Fermin, Travis d'Arnaud. I think Augustine is going a bit later, but likely rising. Any late catcher value?
So that I don't know, and I'm not just going to sit here and make something up, but we need to start looking into that, right? Because we both have a ton of Tyler Stevenson and going to have to look through that dredge for catcher replacements. Maybe you have already. I have not.
No, I have not. But Danny Jansen, we talked about him on the show. He'd be one I would look at.
But like not Goodman, right? Like, he's not starting.
That's the thing is, I love him, but he's going to be backing up Stallings to start off with. Baldwin may not even be on the team.
What about Stallings?
I know he had two home runs yesterday, but
oh god, he did.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Jacob Stallings guy. I think he's.
I mean, who is outside of Jake and Stallings family?
Let me pull up my rankings real quick.
So the Rockies start on the road. They start with a big ass road trip at the Rays, at the Phillies. It's an East Coast. They start their first home games April 4th against the A's.
I'll throw out a name right now. He's not even on my rankings, but Elias Diaz of the San Diego Padres is a guy to keep an eye on because he looks like he's going to win the job over Campusano.
Okay, good. I like that.
That's a guy.
Write him down.
Write him down in leagues you don't have with me.
I have Tyler Stevenson.
Yes, there you go. All right, to the Discord for some listener questions here because you guys came through once again. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, Sean Chard says, which top relief pitcher spec are you targeting in this range? Usetta, Jax, Cade Smith, Porter Hodge, or Ryan Kirkering? Who do you like in this range?
God. I mean, out of those options, probably Kirkering. Not in hopes, but maybe Romano goes down and isn't the closer. But I think Fauché or Halverson is your move in this group.
Those are your moves on the list he mentioned. I will take Griffin Jacks. I'm always a Griffin Jacks guy, time and time again. Aaron Gifts said, standard Yahoo leagues only go 276 spots deep. So what players outside of the top 300 ADP should still be drafted in a league this shallow? The ones we targeted.
I would say our targets. I feel like you don't need as much coverage in those types of leagues because you can just pick any old person up off waivers. So I don't know.
Take all the upside plays, all of them.
Yes, exactly. Point. Yeah.
But yeah, take all the upside, especially the pitching side. Really, really pepper the pitching because you can replace
even the hitter side in a league that shallow.
Yeah, you get a lot of replacement options there for sure. Sean Chard says, pick a recently surging starting pitcher. Dustin May, Max Meyer, Will Warren, Casey Mize. I think we actually somehow
did this. Out of that group, I will actually take Max Meyer just because like he could pop off.
He could.
Whereas Mize, like, I think Mize will be pretty good, but the Meyer ceiling is pretty nuts still. So I'll go Meyer.
I'll take Casey Mize on this one, but I'd go Mize, Meyer, or Warren May for me.
Okay. Yep. Agreed.
All right. Aaron Gifts has another one. What undrafted catchers should I be looking for to fill in for Tyler Stevenson and Sean Murray?
Oh, okay.
There you go.
I must have seen that question already. Yeah.
Jansen, Elias Diaz, be a few
Elias
more.
Elias Diaz. Who's the Reds backup behind Stevenson?
Jose Trevino, who's actually
Hey, good park.
Yeah, that's why it's not a horrible fill-in if it's a short-term deal. I'll say that much. If it's short-term, not opposed to it. It's just going to be tough. I need some time to breathe on this one. This one stings. This one hits home Reds, pretty hard.
Reds start at home against your Giants.
That's a plus.
And then they continue. They've got 6 or 7 games at home to start the season.
And just off the top of my head, I don't know where he's going in ADP right now, but if you need like a ladder or a waterfall of options, Pedro Pajes is the Cardinals because everyone's drafting Herrera, who I like more, but Pajes probably plays a lot more. So if you need at-bats, that's a dude. Just throw it out there. All right, TDK90 says, where do you buy bags at all in this range? Well, Ryan nailed it in his player debates.
Yeah, Jacob Young, that's your guy. That's your guy for steals at this point with a backup of – I'd probably take Dylan Moore over Caballero, but either one of those two is backups if you're desperate.
Yeah, he also mentioned like Johnny DeLuca, Brian Hayes, Frelick, IKF. DeLuca I don't mind in that grouping as well. Grizzmania says, are there any potential future closers in this range? And if so, if you're a light on saves, who should you grab as a potential future closer? That's been answered already.
So yeah, I would throw out, if you want to play the long game, because he said potential future closers, I would say Edwin Uceta at 319 ADP is not the closer to start, and that's why it's tough to draft him. But if you're in saves and holds, or you have deep benches and kind of want to wait it out, I think Uceta is a UCETA is a good pick at 319 for that.
I'm thinking, I could be wrong, I think Tinoco goes later. He's another one to keep an eye on. If the Fauché thing doesn't work, Tinoco's a good one to circle. All right, TDK also says, any credence to the draft three catchers idea? I heard a guy do it accidentally. Someone else commented that someone showed it working out. Just curious, because lots of catchers going down and scarcity of those bubble catchers is going to go through the roof. I'm considering a 30th round starting catcher as a start the season stash, because I know the rest of my roster is fresh and healthy. I still don't do it. Jake Rogers is another guy just came to mind. It's probably available if you want some power but no batting average at catcher. Just throwing that one out there. But
I don't think I've ever drafted a third catcher in a fab league.
And that was the rest of the stuff was discussed there on why you probably shouldn't do it in the Discord there. All right, Ryan, that'll wrap it up. Five pockets, ADP from 100 to 300 and beyond. Done.
Did it.
Yes.
Did it. I'm proud. We got good feedback on this series last year. Good feedback so far on it again. I hope it was useful for all of you guys. I know it's a lot of content, a lot of time to listen to all of them, but hey, we'll put it out there. And if you're consuming it, we'll keep doing it. So again, helpful for, if nothing else, helpful for you and me personally with our last few drafts.
100% helpful in that regard. Makes it so I really don't even have to bring anything to the draft table. I'm just like, all right, we're ready to go. Like, not like I usually bring much to begin with. That's kind of the running joke.
Opposed to the laptop with multiple screens that you bring to the table and early in draft season. Yeah.
Fair enough. But I feel even more comfortable, let's put it that way, than just knowing what's going down. So we got you covered there. Next week, we got our roadmaps for hitting and pitching. We'll have you covered for. And then it's Vegas, baby, Favists. Viva Las Vegas. So lots of fun stuff going around. I'll let you have the floor one more time, Ryan, if you'd like it. But second to last big draft season weekend coming along.
Yeah, if anyone out there has suggestions what you'd want to see from us out in Vegas too, let us know. We've got some pretty good ideas of what we're going to do, but always open. It's a unique opportunity for us to cover the weekend and kind of go behind the scenes with guests, with ourselves, and that sort of thing. So if there's anything you guys want to see out of that trip content-wise, let us know.
Yep. We'll be open. I've already had a couple of people DM saying they'd like to chat with us. So a lot of cool stuff to do while we're there and only so much time to do it. So we'll see how we can make it all work. But for now, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, the Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and I am at BDentric. This was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 224. Catch y'all later.